Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing? It's been another, very busy week here. I've just been doing lots of promo for the book, which has been great fun. Getting to be on the other side of the mic. I've been a guest on a few podcasts, which is really nice. And talk radio was great last weekend with Mark Dolan. That was good. That was good to be able to chat about this stuff. And it's just nice to be able to bring that, well, hopefully, very positive spin on it all. I also did an event for Sussex Living, for Hidden County, a webinar the other night, and that was really good fun. And it was interesting because when I do these events as sort of webinars or podcasts, I'm so often asked the same questions. Obviously, they would have been the things that I wanted to know too. And they're almost always around how people are going to have fun. How are they going to carry on with their life, with what they see as the good bits, particularly in lockdown, when God knows, you know, that it can feel tough to have any kind of sense of fun for anything. So the question is often, well, how could I possibly do this during a lockdown when, you know, it's kind of all I've got? Drinking is kind of all I've got. And my answer to that would, of course, be lockdown is a fantastic time to do this. Any time is actually. Now is the right time. Sound like I'm going to deliver a Bible verse. Now is the accepted time. But it really is the best time because you don't have the same social pressures. You're not having to think of the excuses for whether or not you're going out to the pub or the bar. Because no one's doing that anyway. So it's actually a great time to be focusing on your own self-care and your own health and well-being. And then the second question that came in on the webinar I did last night was, what else will I do? How will I relieve my stress and just feel okay with everything that's going on? And again, the answer would be, let's not sugarcoat this. You know, alcohol is a depressant. Let's not mess about. It's a depressant. There is not one single benefit. Of course, we think it helps us to relax. Of course, we think that it is what makes the end of a day okay again. And I sure as hell thought that for many years, but it's not true. The emperor's not wearing any clothes. The answer isn't in a glass. It's just that we're looking for a feeling and all our associations tell us that that's how we get it. But it isn't true. And if we can just reframe our thinking, if we can just notice the thoughts and ask ourselves, what is it we're really looking for? Is it that actually we're, you know, that lovely, little sentence again, halt. Are we actually hungry, angry, lonely or tired? Often it's one of those things. And we all know there's better ways of dealing with that stuff. And if it's just that we do want to switch off for a bit and, you know, get out of our head in a healthy way, then again, there's so many more ways of doing that, whether it's going and lying on a mat and listening to a podcast or a meditation. I've got a bunch of free meditations on thesoberclub.com. Perhaps you want to go for a walk in nature. That so often does the trick. Just get out and get moving, or just dance. You know, we did that. I had that fantastic session with Yakov Darling Khan, the shaman, and his top tip for stress and anxiety, however bad it is put some music on and dance. Just drop into the body. So, you know, there's so many ways, so many different ways that you can deal with stress, deal with anxiety without thinking that you need an extra depressant on top of it. So that's my little rant for this week. I've got such a packed show and some fantastic guests. I thought that as the book is now out, if you haven't got it yet, here's another plug coming. Happy, healthy, sober. Ditch the booze and take control of your life. You can get a copy from wherever you normally buy it. Please leave me a review on Amazon. And if you want a signed copy, then if you go to thesoberclub.com, click on shop. I can do a signed copy. At the moment, we're only shipping within the UK, but have a look at that. There's also a competition to win a book and some supplements. from Marilyn Glenville, and there's also a discount code for Marilyn Glenville. So anyways, if as the book is out and we're doing lots of promo for the book, I thought it'd be a great idea to team up with a few drinks brands, because of course what underpins all of this is keeping the ritual, changing the ingredients, being able to have something nice to drink that isn't alcohol. I do think that's such an key part of all of this. And if your brain is now thinking, well, that kind of doesn't work for me because I don't want the wine or the beer because that's what I used to drink and that would just trigger me. Well, I have got just the most amazing suggestion for you. We've teamed up this week with Jimber, and oh man alive, this is an amazing drink. It is just absolutely incredible. Obviously, taste of ginger. It's really fiery and hot. It is such a versatile drink. And the best way we can describe this to you is by bringing you an interview with the main man, the founder. They've got some fabulous kind of strap lines, like sunshine in a bottle. It really is. And the most versatile drink ever. And then later on in the show, stay tuned, whatever you do, because I've got an interview with Dr. Gemma Newman. She is just incredible. She's one of the very few brave, outspoken medical doctors who really gets the link between what we eat and how we are. So she's just incredible. So Dr. Gemma Newman is going to be my guest later. But first off, enjoy this with Dimitri. Hi, and welcome to Dimitri from the fantastic brand Jimber. It's so lovely to chat to you, Dimitri. I can't tell you how much I love your drink. Seriously, if you want to wake up, wow, is it great. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you, Jeannie. Thanks.
I'd love to know a bit more about your background and a bit about how the drink came about. So I always find it fascinating to know the kind of story, you know, behind the product. So tell us a bit about your work.
Well, I absolutely not coming from the beverage industry. I was working as a TV producer. I was making children cartoon animations. But for years, I was looking for an alcohol-free drink. You know, going to parties and events, it's just awful to have just bad French wine or just orange juice.
Yeah, isn't it?
An option. And I felt that I was losing all my energy to that. And in 2010, I had a very important crash. My health totally broke. I am one of those guys who worked and worked and worked when I was young, crazy. I was never thinking about my machine, my body. Mm. I was never taking care of that. And even smoking, drinking coffee all day and et cetera. And in 2010, when I crashed, I really felt that alcohol was an issue, that sugar, coffee, et cetera, were problems. And that quest became really very, very strong. In 2017, after many tryouts, I finally, during holidays in France, found something extraordinary for me. My wife came back from a small market with freshly pressed ginger. French use it in the kitchen, you know, they love it. They don't drink it so much, but they use it a lot in the kitchen. And when I tasted that, I said, wow, this is the first time I have an experience that could potentially replace the alcohol feeling. Mm. And even during the holiday, I started working with all kind of ingredients and tryouts to add to this basic ingredient. And at home, the following months, I developed this drink that had no name, which was a mix of ginger, lemon, herbs, spices. And I just produced it for me, for my family. It was for my personal use. But very soon, friends started asking me, hey, Dimitri, we just have the same problem as you. We don't dare to speak about it, but in fact, we also want to replace alcohol now and then. Can you make a bottle of this for us? So I was quite surprised. And a couple of months later, and that was exactly 3 years ago, I decided to produce 25 bottles of that drink and give it a name, Gimber. Mm. And Gimber comes from the three languages that we speak at home, French, Dutch, and English. And you have gingembre in French, ginger in English, and gember in Dutch. And when you squeeze that, you have Gimber.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. I plan to sell those 25 bottles in some stores in Brussels. But at that time, my wife had a wonderful concept store where she was not selling any food or drink. But when she saw the bottles, she absolutely wanted them in her store. Mm. And then the magic happened. She was offering an alternative to alcohol or coffee to her customers. And many of them, really most of them, choose also an alcohol-free option and wanted to taste this Gimber. And she came home and told me 25 bottles are already gone after 2 weeks. I need 50. And then I started producing 50 bottles and so it went on. But you know, I at that time, my company was financially almost broke. My health was a disaster. And emotionally, my self-confidence was nothing anymore. Mm. And this drink, Gimber, totally changed my life. It gave me a window of energy, just a small window, diminishing my alcohol consumption had a giant impact on my life. And it gave me the courage to also try to do other changes. You know, when you make one change in your life and you see that it works, something happens in your brain.
Yeah, definitely. And you say,
if alcohol reduction helps, maybe if I stop drinking coffee, I will have another positive effect. And maybe if I stop eating meat, I will have another positive effect. And if I stop gluten and if I stop whatever, and I changed, it gave me it was the start for me to change plenty of things. And 3 years later, I even sport now every day, something I have not done for maybe 15 or 20 years. Mm. And I'm 45 now. I think my wife, she says now that she has another man.
Definitely. I'm always saying it's the best anti-aging secret ever.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. It's a lovely story. And we must talk about, you know, the power of ginger, because, you know, ginger is often overlooked. It's such an important inflammatory tool, apart from anything anti-inflammatory, isn't it? It's so good for us. Just tell us a little bit about, you know, what you know about ginger.
Well, ginger is a really fascinating world indeed. There are approximately more than 1,000 different kinds of
really wow
of ginger. I didn't try them all, but I tried really a lot. And indeed, ginger has extraordinary medical beneficial benefits. And ginger is the plant with most proven, scientifically proven health benefits, going from anti-inflammatory, antioxidant. We even got plenty of emails, believe me or not, from people that had corona, telling us we tried a lot of things. Gimber, your drink, was the thing that gave us most relief. Mm. That's also thanks to the gingerol. It's the active compound, one of the active compounds of ginger that has such extraordinary powers. Some people even tell it has an aphrodisiac effect, but unfortunately, it is not true.
Where do you source yours from then? What kind is yours?
Yeah, mainly from Peru. Mm-hmm. And that's really from the quest. When I was telling you that I tried so many different kinds of ginger, for me, the Rolls-Royce, the absolute Everest of ginger is the Peruvian ginger. It's a very small yellow ginger. They call them in Spanish amarillo, which means yellow in Spanish. He grows in the mountains near the Amazon forest. And it's a ginger that needs to fight. And you know, in the mountains, in very hard circumstances, you don't have a lot of juice out of that, but so much flavor, so much taste, a natural lemongrass flavor, which is extraordinary. And to me, it's totally logic. You know, everything that needs to fight, all human that had to fight in life, they are much more savory.
So it's a really high quality product, isn't it? I think it's really important to stress this. You know,
yeah,
this is
absolutely.
You know, it's organic. It's a real artisan blend, and I think that's what's so unique about this drink is you know, so often when we've been used to drinking alcohol, if we then have an alcohol free drink or a soft drink, it just doesn't kind of cut it often, you know. And people will often say, "Well, I can't get that kind of burn feeling that I used to have with alcohol," you know. But yours does that. It's got this fantastic kick, and you know, we must mention that the packaging is gorgeous as well. It looks so beautiful. I mean, that was a funky old design you got there on those bottles, wasn't it?
Yeah, right. I choose for something really very easy and something timeless.
Mm.
A little bit. Kind of a boho style.
And is it just the one size you do? Just tell us what how it comes, as it were.
We have just one product. You know, I love this Tabasco mentality. You have one product, but you just do it the best way, and you just make that, you put all your positive energy on that product. And one of my greatest pleasures is when one of our customers told me, "Dimitri, you are selling sunshine in a bottle."
I think that's lovely.
It's we just want to put all our time, efforts, sweat, and tears on improving this single one product. And it's something I learned from the past, and it's probably the reason why I crashed is because I had too many different projects. I put my energy and wasted my energy in so many different things, and life learned me that. Take care of one thing and just be the best in what you do.
And you're so right that, you know, this, it's hard to imagine how this would have come about the same way if you had still been drinking. You know, the amount of people that I meet who, once they quit the booze, then suddenly they have just a whole different kind of energy for new projects.
Totally. I'm 45. I started this project, I was 43, I will be 46 a couple of days. It would be, today we are selling in the most beautiful stores in 17 countries in Europe. I have a fantastic team, we are about 70 people, energized. It would be impossible for me to run this company, to build this project, if I was still drinking.
I
dare to write that down, and I would convince everybody. I like a glass of wine, but to me it's just a taste, but it's absolutely not my everyday anymore, and I'm so happy with that.
Great, thank you so much. It's brilliant. Just give us the website then, where we can find more about it.
Yeah, you can find it on jimber.com.
Brilliant. And we have a fantastic competition, so I'm really grateful to you for that, to offer some to give away. Thank you so much for your time, Dimitri, and lots of success. And hopefully we'll speak in a year and see what's happened then. You'll be in loads more countries.
It would be fantastic. Thanks
much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So don't forget, you can win some if you go to thesoberclub.com. Check out the blog post there as well. And as promised, I love this woman. She is so knowledgeable. She wrote a great piece for my book, so she's included in there. I'm really grateful to her for that. Dr. Gemma Newman. Dr. Gemma Newman, thank you so much for being my guest again. I interviewed you a while back, but this new book, man, what a thing. It's just brilliant. The Plant Power Doctor, A Simpler Prescription for a Healthier You. And it is a prescription, isn't it? It's just brilliant. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Janie. like it.
it's such an amazing book, and just the fact that, I know I've said this to you before, but just the fact that you are a doctor, but such a kind of shining light in this holistic field, more holistic field, because, you know, we know that for so many years
certainly, you know, with general practitioners, that there just hasn't been even a link. They haven't even seen a link between what we eat and how we are. I mean, just, I know it seems bizarre and I know it's getting better. Please tell me it is getting better, but you are still very unique in this, aren't you?
Well, thank you for saying that. But I, you know, I do think it is starting to get better, because I see a lot of GP colleagues who are just burnt out and frustrated with the knowledge that they currently have. And they feel as though, you know, there's so much more that they could offer their patients and that their patients could hopefully utilise to improve their lives. So I do think it's getting better. You know, what encourages me is that there are a lot of community schemes now talking about lifestyle medicine.
Yeah.
Community programs, social support programs, they call it social prescribing.
Social prescribing, yeah. I saw something a while ago that Dr. Sam Etherington, have I got his name right? He's kind of one of the main men in that area. And I did think it just looked amazing. If it really works in practice, it's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's much needed. And, you know, from my perspective as well, I felt like when I graduated, I was so enthusiastic, thinking, oh, I'm going to help save lives. And then as the years go on, you realise that what's in your toolbox, although it's, you know, evidence-based and it's useful, you feel as though you're kind of tinkering around with medications and people are gradually declining over time. And you want them to be able to feel, you know, revitalised. You want them to feel as though they've got their health back again. And that's the joy I get from talking about plant-based nutrition and holistic health is actually empowering people to know that there's a chance they could feel better again, rather than just managing that discomfort, managing that disease, managing and not that you don't have to be able to do that. Like, I think it's important to manage your disease process and be able to live with it in a way that you can accept what's going on and get the most out of life. But sometimes it's actually possible to prevent these things from happening in the first place. Mm-hmm. And it's also sometimes possible to reverse these processes. So that's what I want people to know.
Absolutely. And because, you know, food is so powerful. I mean, we all eat, we've all got to eat anyway. So, you know, let's make the most of it. Let's make the best choices. And I, you know, I like the fact as well that you do in the book, you know, it's really obviously thoroughly well researched. You've got all the science in there, but you've also made it very manageable and sort of bite-sized, so that we can look at certain conditions or just pick up on certain sections. I've started at the beginning and I'm working through it and I've almost finished it, but then I'm also finding I'm just sort of thinking, oh, I've forgotten that. Well, now let me just check the hormone section, and hold on, what does she say about diabetes? Because, you know, this is so valuable, this information. I could talk to you for hours, but I'm going to have to chunk it down, aren't I? Let's just talk about immunity, because obviously it feels so important right now for all of us to take back some responsibility. You know, I really do think that now more than ever before, it's time for us to take some responsibility. Those of us that are well, you know, and we're grateful that we're well, but what can we do to boost our immunity to make sure that we, you know, continue to be as healthy as we can and not put a burden on the NHS?
You're right. It's such a crazy time at the moment. And I think that you're also right that it's really important to focus on how can I support my immune system? How can I be the best version of me so that if and when I get exposed to all the bugs that are around and COVID-19 is on everybody's minds, you know, I've optimized my chances of success. You know, I've optimized my chances of feeling okay. And I have to caveat this by saying, clearly, there's a lot we still don't know about COVID-19. And there are lots of patients that I've found who, you know, who've been very unwell, and it was hard for me to understand why. And conversely, very elderly patients that managed to get by with a little sniffle. So it's one of those things. And I do think that the immune system and how it responds to the virus varies quite greatly. Having said that, it is important to focus on what we can do.
Yeah, I mean, it'll never do you any harm to boost your immunity, will it, really?
Well, exactly. It's only going to do you good to focus on how you can best support your immune system. And so number one thing is focusing on your stress at the moment. I think a lot of people are very stressed out. And the news cycle doesn't help.
No, it certainly doesn't. I mean, that the kind of the shame and the fear that's being peddled at us the whole time. I mean, I've been, you know, trying to encourage some of my clients and some sober club members to really just limit themselves, actually, in terms of mainstream media, to once a day, because, yeah. Otherwise, I mean, I've seen people just totally go under because the level of fear that's coming at them is just too much.
You're right, Janie. And fear is actually really detrimental to our immune function. It really is. And so do we really need the extra updates on our phones? Do we really need that news app? Probably not. I think 5 minutes in the morning, get the headlines. If there's something you really want to hear about, fine. Otherwise, just leave it for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And then that way, at least you're protecting your parasympathetic nervous system, your rest and renew nervous system, which helps to get your immune system optimized. So that's number one. Number two, I do think that more whole foods, more plant foods is absolutely essential. You said it yourself, these foods are the building blocks for how our body responds to everything. And so if we can create healthy building blocks, then that also creates a healthy immune system. Think about lots of different colors. Think about all the different varieties of fruits and vegetables that you can enjoy, herbs and spices as well. Particular nuggets of advice would be to make sure you're having foods that are high in vitamin C, because you know, when our bodies are fighting infection, our immune cells actually use a lot of vitamin C. And so it's important to have enough.
And it's important to remember as well that, you know, vitamin C is not just, you know, having an orange or a lemon, you know, it's in broccoli, isn't it? And fat broccoli stalks.
Absolutely. And also, you know, red peppers is probably the highest source. People don't necessarily know that. And as you say, oranges, yes, kiwis, peppers, cauliflower, you know, you mentioned broccoli, all these things contain vitamin C. And I don't think it does any harm to take a high dose vitamin C supplement during illness. Now, this is not something that is necessarily evidence-based, but when you see that the immune cells use a lot of vitamin C in order to function, it makes sense to flood your body with vitamin C in, you know, on a basic level. And you'll pee out the excess. Expensive vitamins, but at least you've got it in your system.
And vitamin D as well, while we're on this topic, you know, I mean, there's been a lot spoken about it. You know, I'm sure I've said this to you before, and many listeners to the podcast will know that, you know, my story is that years and years ago, as a journalist, I happened to have a test, because I was having a test for a bunch of things, because I was writing about it as a journalist. And it just so transpired that in the course of this vitamin D test that I, you know, queen of goddamn health, who'd been going around telling people to get checked, was at 12. My levels were at 12.
Oh, it's
how scary is that?
It is scary. You know, I also checked my vitamin D levels a few years back, and they were surprisingly low. I wasn't at 12.
But but the thing is, you know, there I was telling everyone else, and because you don't know that you don't really recognize symptoms till, you know, it can get really quite severe. So I now am very passionate about vitamin D. I'm also passionate about getting some sunshine now, even though we haven't got much at the minute. But when I can, I do. Whereas in the past, I used to cover absolutely everything up and be, you know, Mrs. Shade Girl kind of thing. But I now do get some sunshine. But what's your view on vitamin D supplements for most people in the winter?
I think it's absolutely vital for most people in winter. You know, there was some pooled data from 16 clinical trials, and I think there's about over 7,000 people involved in these trials, and they show that taking vitamin D supplements reduces the risk of getting at least one respiratory infection, including things like flu and pneumonia, by a third. And in those with a low vitamin D, the effect is even greater, reducing the risk by almost half compared to placebo.
I mean, I think the government are now finally addressing this, aren't they? And admitting that this is a, you know, one of the tools in the toolbox that needs to be looked at. And would you agree that the liquid vitamin D, the oral sprays or the oral drops, are better than the capsules or tablets?
They seem to be more bioavailable, but in all honesty, if anything you can get, just, you know, take what you can afford and what you can get hold of, because you know, sometimes finances play a part in decision making. I think probably basic advice would be about 1,000 international units a day. Some people can do well on 2,000. I wouldn't go, unless you have an absolute deficiency, Don't go higher than 4,000 units because vitamin D is not like vitamin C. It's a fat-soluble vitamin, which means that you can actually get too much of it and that could lead to toxicity. Mm. So, just bear that in mind. National guidelines suggest about 4,000 international units a day, which I think probably is a little bit low for most people. Mm. So yeah, between 1,000 and 2,000 units a day would be my suggestion on that one.
You mean 400? You said 4,000, the recommendations. Yeah.
The recommendation is 400.
400, yeah. Okay, I get it. Yeah, which is, yeah, I think when I had my really low period, I was prescribed vitamin D kind of little tablets, which I was a bit horrified to find they contained artificial sweetener and God knows what, and they were only 200 IU, I think. So I didn't bother taking them at all, just didn't even bother, and got myself a spray that was 3,000 and had an amazing graph of recovery, you know, within a 6-week period, six-month period kind of thing. Yeah. But you know, what you've just said there is really important because, you know, when it comes to supplementation and having a whole food diet, you know, cost does come into play, doesn't it? And there will be people listening who think, well, that's all very well, but I can't afford really expensive supplements or, you know, fancy organic food. And there is, again, there's a lot of misinformation that goes down here because, you know, junk food and really crappy food isn't necessarily, you know, it isn't always cheap anyway, and it certainly isn't going to be doing you any good in the long run. So how do you kind of advise people who are on a limited budget to still make sure they get the right supplementation and to, you know, as you say, to focus on this whole food diet?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that. You're absolutely right, though. I think we'll get back to the immunity tips in a minute. I think with regard to cost, it's really about looking for the whole foods that you can get that will fit your budget. And believe it or not, you can get sort of odd-shaped fruits and vegetables on discount, especially from big supermarkets.
Yeah.
So look out for those. Look out for tinned goods and also goods that you can cook at home, like big batch rice, big batch pasta, whole grain, if you can. And think about the pulses that you can get also that are in dry form. So different coloured lentils and different beans, you can soak those, you can cook those, and that will be a lot cheaper than getting them pre-made. And then when it comes, I mean, that's also a lot cheaper than pretty much any pre-made thing. So even if say you're having a lot of packaged foods, it's actually going to be cheaper to get those kind of big bulk rice, big buy fruits and veggies than it would be to get those. And in terms of supplementation, actually, you know, there's a really, really decently priced supplement by the charity, the Vegan Society, which is called Veg One. Mm-hmm. And it contains vitamin B12, vitamin D. I think there's a little bit of iodine, selenium, and one other vitamin, I believe. And it's only, I think it's only £6.60 for three months.
Wow. And that's by the Vegan Society.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Really cheap. And it's because it's a charity and it's been formulated by dietitians. Mm. It's just a really nice way to think, okay, well, that has cost me pennies.
Yeah.
Less than pennies, you know. Well, not less than pennies, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally. Thank you. Thank you for that recommendation. That's brilliant. Let's go back to the immunity. What else did you want to say?
So just in terms of food things, I think there was a study I read as well about zinc, which showed that it can potentially reduce viral replication inside our cells. So it's important, again, just to get that right balance. So too much can cause toxicity, like with vitamin D. So just make sure that you get a fair amount of things like beans or chickpeas, lentils, tofu, walnut or flax seeds, and wholemeal bread as well. They all contain zinc. Just, you know, so you're aware.
So do that through foods rather than trying to take a zinc supplement.
Yes, I think that as long as you're having an abundance of those foods, you'll get enough zinc. And I mentioned herbs, didn't I? And think that's really important. Fresh, you know, the French are onto something with their garlic. And garlic's technically a root, but it has great antimicrobial effects in several studies, the allicin from garlic. And you know, things like sage and oregano and cumin and thyme, all these amazing herbs and spices. And of course, turmeric, which most people know. They give you an extra dose of immune support as well, which is really important. And other than that, other lifestyle things as well. I've mentioned stress. Moving your body is really, really important for helping your immune system. If you can move your body regularly, it allows your lymph to flow. And you know, your muscles move that lymph fluid around your body, which is how your immune cells can fight infections. So you have to use your muscles to get the lymph flowing as best you can. Because it doesn't have the heart to pump it around. Like your circulatory system uses your heart to pump blood around and oxygen. But your immune cells, they tend to go in the lymph fluid. So if you move your body, that really helps. And sleep is really important as well. Our T cells, which are, you know, our important sort of immune regulators, they respond directly to the amount of sleep that we get. Even 4 hours, 5 hours jeopardizes how your immune system will work the next day. And it can also reduce the efficacy of vaccines. So if you have decide to have the vaccine and you know, poor sleep can actually reduce your immune ability to sort of to respond to the vaccine as well. So that's important.
Absolutely. I was just going to ask, you know, about when you talk about whole food, plant-based diets, you know, which you talk about in the book, is a whole food plant-based diet necessarily a vegan diet?
Not necessarily. So, I mean, the definitions are quite hard for people to get. But when you see something in the supermarket and it says it's plant-based, you know, it doesn't contain any animal products. But when somebody describes their diet as plant-based, they may also be talking about having a variety of different dietary patterns that happen to have mostly plants. So, you know, with Mediterranean style eating patterns or Thai, even things like you're looking at general kind of patterns of eating, even paleo, they could still describe themselves as being plant-based because they recognize that most of what they're eating is plants. When you're talking about whole foods, plant-based diets, that generally means no animal products, but the real emphasis is making sure it's an abundance of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and pulses. Chickpeas, lentils, beans, herbs and spices, nuts and seeds. Those are the main pillars of what you would be eating. And then you can create a variety of different cuisines within that framework.
Yeah. And I love the fact that in the book, you know, you make this really super clear as to, you know, the different suggestions and what different things do for us and how good they are, and great recipes, by the way. I mean, you know, just some really great suggestions in there. I think what it's important to stress as well, that you know, some vegan diets and well, any diet obviously, but a vegetarian diet or a vegan diet doesn't necessarily mean it's a healthy one. And I don't know about you, but I've seen some of the kind of vegan alternative foods, and honestly, they're shocking. I mean, they're absolutely shocking. They're just, it's just a load of stuff being concocted in a factory, and it's not even food. So I think people do have to be a bit careful there. That's why I think, you know, just a little bit more explanation about, you know, as you do in the book, a whole food plant-based diet doesn't mean that you can just necessarily go and choose the sort of the vegan alternative to a sausage roll or whatever if it's never seen food.
Yeah, you're really right to bring this up, Janie. And I always think of it in terms of an instead of what question. So, you know, you mentioned vegan sausage rolls. So, you know, if you absolutely love to eat sausage rolls, then if you go to Greg's and get yourself a vegan sausage roll, then what you're doing really is substituting one high fat and unhealthy option for another. The benefits are, of course, that it's a more sustainable sausage roll, and it doesn't involve any, you know, animal use, so that's handy for the pig. In terms of your own arteries, you'd be better off having, you know, like, I don't know, like a mushroom and lentil burger, the whole BAP. And so, you know, you think to yourself, okay, so it's kind of just deciding, well, what are you replacing that with? And that will help you to figure out whether it's a healthier choice or not. Although I did read one study which really interested me. It was around the plant-based beef burgers, the meat replacement burgers. They did have more salt in, and they still contain saturated fat from coconut oil, but they also lacked some of the things that were in the actual beef burger that could cause potential harm. So that's heme iron and different carcinogenic compounds like HCAs and new 5GC. So it was interesting because you think, well, even having the processed burger, which didn't contain meat, was actually probably on balance, maybe a slightly healthier choice, but not as great. Lentil mushroom burger, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously any food, you know, food you've sort of put together from scratch are always going to be healthier, aren't they, than the kind of processed options. I mean, I have to be really careful if I opt for any sort of vegetarian or vegan choices, because I'm highly allergic to quorn, you know, quorn, that hideous thing.
Yeah.
I personally think it's a horrible, disgusting thing. But I wouldn't I? Because I'm really allergic to it. But it's in so many of those vegan and veggie alternatives.
Yeah, I think, is it the microprotein that you're allergic to?
Yeah.
It's a shame. Yeah, it can be. But the good news is it is good news that there's more variety, because there is a lot more choice.
Yeah.
And I've seen actually that there's quite a lot of minimally processed choices now in the supermarket, different kinds of plant-based sausages and burgers and things that actually think, you look at the ingredients in the back and you think, actually that's pretty good, that's a decent choice, and it doesn't always contain those.
Yeah, that's good. No, definitely the choices are getting better. And what about in terms of longevity then? I know that you've got a whole section in the book on this, and of course it's fascinating, isn't it, that we hear about these tribes. I remember years ago I read John Robbins' book Healthy at 100, and I just thought it was fascinating because he'd done all this research on different tribes and different cultures, you know, where they live a really long time, and it wasn't a case of they all ate the same thing. Yeah. Ergo, we must all eat this. It was actually a really wide variety. What's your thought on longevity?
I love that book. I read that book as well. And what I love about John and Ocean Robbins is they work so hard to help people have a healthier, longer life, which I think is great. But you're right, it doesn't all have to be the same pattern of eating. You sort of look at things other than food too. So the blue zone populations I love reading about. It was, the phrase was coined by Dan Buettner, a journalist for the National Geographic, and his work was funded by the National Institutes of Health. And he went around all these places in the world that had the highest healthy longevity, like the most people that lived to 100 or near 100. And what he found out about them was really fascinating. So first up, you're right, they weren't all from the same place. There was Icaria in Greece and Loma Linda in California. There was, where else was there?
Isn't there the Okinawans in Japan, is it?
Japan, yeah. And as I say, Sardinia in Italy, and an island off the coast of Costa Rica. And what they had in common was, yes, they had mostly whole foods, mostly plant foods. There was a lot of soy, minimally processed soy as well. And they moved their bodies consistently throughout the day. They weren't going to the gym or anything like that. They were just active, you know, they had a great strong sense of community.
I was going to say that the community part is really interesting, isn't it? Particularly right now when so many people are isolated.
Oh gosh, it's really interesting. And it's something that I've reflected on quite a lot during this pandemic. It's the idea of how community also gives you a sense of meaning, how it gives you a sense of purpose, that you are giving something to others. There's that emphasis on giving to those around you, which we did see, I think, a lot of, especially at the beginning. You know, there were so many NHS volunteers and people going to other people's houses, checking up on them from afar, which was lovely. But you're right, there's a lot of isolation, a lot of loneliness, and that has to change because that's going to be fundamental. But yeah, it was mostly whole foods, mostly plant foods. In the Loma Lindens, it's almost 100% or 100% vegan. But in some of the other populations, you know, the high vegetarian sort of Mediterranean style, essentially. So loads of fruits and veggies, the pulses, the whole grains, they tended to make a huge kind of appearance in their, their eating. But It's really fascinating, and so there is some research behind why that would be. I really enjoyed reading the research of Dr. Walter Longo, who's a longevity expert, and he's Nobel Prize nominated scientist. And he talks about the importance of reducing overall caloric intake, but also avoiding excess protein, which people tend to get a lot of, thinking, oh, it fills me up and it's good for me. But yes, we all need protein. We need the essential amino acids, but not in excess.
Yeah.
About how, you know, so he strongly advocates for a type of intermittent fasting as well, which I think it doesn't always suit everyone, but what was interesting to me was his research around leucine and the role that as an amino acid plays in aging, cellular aging, and excess sugar as well in cellular aging. So thinking about having natural sugars from fruits, natural proteins from plants, and not eating lots and lots so that you know you're eating more than you need would be great strategies, you know, for longevity.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about hormones. It's something that I know I've spoken to you about it before. It's such a massive topic, I know, but what can we do, particularly as women who are menopausal or perimenopausal, what can we do to support that time in our lives from a dietary perspective?
Well, I think probably my top tip would be fibre, because it's really great at helping to boost hormonal regulation. What happens when you have a lot of fibre-rich foods, your fruits, your vegetables, your whole grains and your pulses, is that you're able to poop regularly, making sure you've got enough fluids in your body as well. Now, that's important because if you're hanging on to poo, if you're getting constipated, then unfortunately what happens is your body is essentially recycling unwanted hormones. So your body has made or been exposed to various hormones and then tries to get rid of them through your poo. But if your poo is stuck in the large intestine, then it gets reabsorbed by the intestinal wall. And so you're going to be more exposed to hormones that you were trying to get rid of. So upping your fiber and fluid intake is a really simple thing to keep in mind. You could try fermented foods to feed your gut bugs, your little gut buddies, things like tempeh and miso and sauerkraut, if you're into that. I've already mentioned, we both talked about cutting back on processed foods, but there are certain unhealthy fats that could actually increase the amount of hormones that we produce in our bodies, so hormone mimicking effects. So things like that would be, you know, having excess animal products in a way, because what happens is you're essentially being exposed to their hormones as well as your own, and that can stimulate IGF-1, which is insulin-like growth factor 1 in your body, which can then increase the long-term risks of things like cancer, which is something else that Dr. Volta Longo touched on in his research as well. In terms of hormonal flushes and things like that, then I would actually, assuming you're not allergic to it, suggest perhaps minimally processed soy foods every day. So things like edamame beans, tofu, tempeh, miso paste, because it's just, it's very good at helping to regulate your estrogen levels. So soy is a selective estrogen receptor modulator, or a SERM, and studies show that it can actually help bone health, and also reduce risk of things like breast and uterine cancers. So, and also, yeah, it's supposed to be quite good for flushing.
Yeah, I mean, I know you write a bit about this in the book, and you do point out in the book that it can be quite controversial, can't it, soy? You know, and I've had this conversation with a few hormonal experts, because you still get people who say, well, actually, don't have too much soy. Certainly things like soy milk, you wouldn't want to be having too much of it. And it is interesting because, you know, when we hear about, you know, isn't there a study that shows that, you know, women in the East sort of don't tend to get the same levels of breast cancer. And that's often put down to the soy that they eat. But isn't it relatively small amounts of fermented foods rather than 4 cappuccinos a day with soy milk?
I don't think the amount of soy milk in a cappuccino or 4 would actually really have any negative impact, to be honest with you.
You don't. So no. do you not think there is it? Am I wrong then? Is there no controversy? Where have I got that idea from then, in terms of, you know, this kind of being a little bit cautious about soy?
So there's a few areas that I think it might have come from. So the first is just the knowledge that it's you remember I mentioned it was a SERM, a selective estrogen modulator. So another word for that is called a phytoestrogen. So people hear the word estrogen and they think, oh, well, that's going to be quite harmful for me, because if I have excess estrogen, then that can increase my risk of cancer. But what's interesting is that when you're having cow's milk, normal kind of cow's milk, what you're doing is you're actually taking in bioequivalent mammal estrogen, because you're drinking the milk from a pregnant mammal. Whereas if you're drinking soy milk, then that's a much, much former, much, much weaker form of estrogen exposure, and it's a plant estrogen. So it's actually quite useful for menopausal women. There was one study that showed soy milk every day could actually increase bone mineral density. If you compared it to a group of women who were given progesterone cream or nothing, just as a placebo. Interestingly, there are plant estrogens that could be strong enough to cause things like man boobs, but that would come from the hops in beer.
Right.
So, you know, if you're really worried as a man about getting things like man boobs, you'd probably be best avoiding excess cow's milk, because you're drinking the lactation fluid of a pregnant mammal, but also,
ditch the booze. Yes. I think you find I'll be saying that anyway.
I know.
But it's interesting though, sorry, the other problem, am I right in thinking that with the sort of plant-based milks and products, but specifically with the milks, with something like soy milk and rice milk and almond milk, it's all the other stuff that's added in to make it taste okay. That's the problem, isn't it?
It can be sometimes, depending on the brand that you go for. Mm. So some of them have got extra sugar added, and some of them also contain emulsifiers.
Yeah.
That great for gut health, because they're not too they are detrimental to your gut bacteria. So I think it's always worth looking at the label to see what is actually in this.
Have you got any that you would recommend?
Well, I'm not supposed to talk about different brands.
No, okay.
Although I did mention Veg One, because that's a charity.
Yeah, okay. I'll dig some out and I'll make some recommendations. Yeah, I get that.
Look at the label and see what you think.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we've already touched on it briefly, but obviously, you know, what I would include in all of this is that if you want your hormones to be in good health, and if you want an improved immunity, then obviously ditching the booze is a good idea. And I know you talk a bit about alcohol in the book. You know, when people are stopping drinking, those early weeks can feel really difficult. How do you think we can best support ourselves nutritionally once we've ditched the booze, or when we're in the early stages?
Well, it's a tough one, because I think when you're in the early stages, every day probably feels like a bit of a battle.
Yeah.
Every moment or every hour, you're thinking, oh, you know, I could have been having this, or I could be doing that. So I think to distract yourself is quite handy. And focusing on your values, I think, is really helpful. So focusing on, why is it that I am ditching the booze right now? Remind yourself all the things that you get from having a life without alcohol, if that's what you're choosing to do. And you'll notice that when you write down those values, and when you write down those things that are important to you, then they can also apply to the things that you're eating as well.
Yeah.
The things that you're putting inside this beautiful body of yours that you're wanting to maintain and show some love for. And so that helps you to make a healthier choice when it comes to snacks. And I think probably another big tip, apart from thinking about the values and why it is you're choosing these things, is to really aim to avoid buying some of the junk food, because otherwise it is ridiculously tempting to just go and have a snack late at night, because you know, you want to put something in your mouth, you want to put something to your lips. Then, you know, it's almost like torturing yourself to have the things in the house that you're trying not to eat. So just make a promise to yourself that on your online shop, or when you're going around the supermarket, you don't put the junk food in. So then you're not necessarily going to choose it. And then if and when you decide, oh, you know, I really have a craving for this particular food item, then you can buy it, look at it, enjoy it, smell it, taste it, savour it, and feel glad that you had it, because you really appreciated it.
Yeah.
Rather than just eating it without really thinking about it.
Yeah. And then, you know, further down the line, what you know, for those of us who feel we have a bit of work to do in cleansing the liver after the amount of torture we've put it through, what is there anything sort of extra that we can do that helps with the liver cleansing?
Well, I'm a huge fan of cruciferous vegetables. Mm. We've talked about this before. I love cruciferous vegetables. They are really great for helping your phase two detoxification pathways in the liver. So get yourself your broccoli, your cauliflower, your sprouts, your kale. Really think about how you're going to try and include those things as much as possible. Get yourself a big couple of bags of kale and make sure you make a smoothie with them each day, perhaps, as an idea. Mm. Just because that's going to be great for nourishing that liver, giving it every chance it can. But remember, the beauty of reducing your alcohol and stopping it altogether is that your liver is very resilient. And as long as you're giving it a nice variety of fruits and veggies and grains and legumes, it's going to do a grand job of being able to detoxify for you and and hopefully coming back to life.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that in the book, you know, you even stray into you touch on my area, Gemma. You even go into skincare, which is fantastic. I mean, it's just amazing, because when people do focus on this stuff and they have this whole food plant-based diet, everything starts to get better, doesn't it? And that can be one of the most amazing things for people. It's like, oh my God, I didn't realize that all these years I've had, you know, zits the whole time. I could have just been eating fruit and veg.
Well, I think there's this weird dichotomy, isn't there? Because we all kind of know that fruits and vegetables are good for us. We all know that. But I think what we don't know is quite how good they can be when we have a lot of them and we are avoiding some of the other stuff. So, I mean, I absolutely love seeing the case studies of people who've had improvements in their eczema, in their psoriasis, in their acne. And it brings me so much hope because, you know, I know that skin disorders are complex. Like, it's not as if everybody's going to have immediate incredible transformations, but these things can take time. But also things like stress and hormonal regulation all play a part as well. But having said that, some of the transformations I've seen have been truly inspirational. And so if you're going to be trying something that's going to give you lots of vitality and health anyway, then you may see these additional benefits. I've certainly seen that in my patients. I love that you bring up, you know, that some things can happen as a result of trying something new that you hadn't realised. I have a lovely patient case study, which I think I mentioned in the book, where this lovely lady, she tried to eat a whole foods plant-based lifestyle because she wanted to get rid of her constant diarrhea that she was suffering from. And in the end, she found that her asthma improved, as well as her kidney function. And, you know, she had all these additional benefits that she hadn't appreciated at all. And she was able to actually stop going to the hospital for all these myriad hospital specialist appointments because everything else had sorted itself out in the meantime. So that was just lovely.
Brilliant. And then finally, I can't talk to you about all this stuff without mentioning weight, because there'll be people who are thinking, okay, if I read Gemma's book and I do some of these things and I introduce a whole food plant-based diet and I start to consider all this stuff, will I lose weight? Or very often the magic question, isn't it?
It is very often a magic question, and it's a question that I brought up fairly reluctantly, actually. I felt like it was an important part of the book because, you know, when you have a whole foods plant-based diet, often people do lose weight if they need to. And they don't necessarily have to put really too much effort into that. They just enjoy more whole foods, more plant foods. That I certainly don't recommend calorie counting or restriction. Like, I don't want... Yeah. To feel hungry. The idea of this pattern of eating is that it can be hopefully a way of eating abundantly when you're hungry, and not have to think too hard on the amounts. I think sometimes people start to eat more whole food plant-based and they feel, oh, I'm hungry, and then you ask them what they've eaten and you think, actually, you probably haven't eaten enough, just eat more food.
Yeah, I love it. I love the fact that, you know, most of the things you talk about, well, everything you talk about is about bringing things back to balance, really, isn't it? You know, that's ultimately the goal, and it really is about that, and it's about that holistic picture, you know, because if you're only focusing on what you eat, but you're, as we've already alluded to, sort of massively stressed, it's not going to work. You're not going to process the food properly anyway.
No, that's right. And it's interesting because not only do your satiety hormones respond to stress, but so do your gut bugs as well. And you know, it's really important, as you say, to sort of just sit down and actually really enjoy the food and, you know, notice how it tastes, how it looks, how it feels, and try to switch off from all your worries. Try not to eat and move at the same time, because your digestion won't be so great and you might be sort of more prone to things like reflux as well. So yeah, really enjoy it, focus on it, notice it and feel grateful for it, and hopefully you'll be able to absorb as much of those nutrients as possible.
Brilliant. Gemma, thank you so much. I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours. The book is just brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. You want to give us your website in case people would like to find out more about your work?
Yeah, of course. GemmaNewman.com or plantpowerdoctor.com. It's the same website. And yeah, it's been an absolute joy, Janie, as always, to chat with you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
So check out the book and more of Gemma's work. And as already said, she has a section in Happy, Healthy, Sober, along with a whole bunch of other experts. So if you haven't got yourself a copy yet, please do. Absolutely tell your friends about the podcast. Please rate it, review it, share it. I'd love to know your thoughts. So please do send me your feedback. You know where to find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm kind of the same name everywhere, just at Janie Lee Grace. And obviously, if you want support, connection, accountability, look no further than the Sober Club. Come to thesoberclub.com. It's a small monthly fee. We are still open at the moment for new members, but we'll be closing up soon. So come and check it out. Read some of the testimonials and see if it resonates with you. It's a kind of no-brainer. We do so much in there about optimum health and well-being, and it doesn't matter what stage you're at. So if you're on day one or just sober curious, absolutely fine. Come on in. We'll love bomb you and support you. And if you're on year six, well, fantastic. We'll be checking out what other layers you still need to reveal. Have yourself a fantastic week. See you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.